mere information, but infocognition, and that information on state is crucially linked to and dependent on syntax, the syntax of the questions asked of itself by the self-configuring universe. Due to the self-configurative freedom inherited by reality from UBT, the dynamically self-configuring universe displays uncertainty and complementarity, and thus cannot be locked into locally determinate answers for all possible questions at once, while the extended self-connectivity of conspansive space-time unavoidably implicates the environment in the Q&A. The super-Copernican principle reflects the distribution of the creation event over every point of space-time according to the extended superposition principle, which describes the way consequent states and events are atemporally superposed in their antecedent states and events. Generalized consciousness, the unitary reflexivity of the universe, is a fair description of the self-configuration and self-processing capacity of SCSPL as captured by the telic and M equals R principles. While conspansive space-time links spatially and temporally distant objects in a web of contact and communication, exceeding even the neural connectivity of a human brain. And the CTMU describes the universe as just the sort of complex, teleologically self-variegating, self-synthesized information system prescribed by Moore is different, telic recursively explicating multiplicity and diphyonesis from the unity and synesis of distributed SCSPL syntax, the unique CTMU counterpart of what has sometimes been called the implicate order. The above analogy is only partial, and it is nowhere implied that the current presentation is without its gaps. But in fairness, several crucial points can be made in favor of the CTMU even at this early stage of exposition. First, it is super tautological. Being constructed to mirror logical tautology up to the level of model theory and beyond, it is true in much the same way that a theory of pure mathematics would be true, but with reference to an expanded universe consisting of both mathematical and physical reality. Indeed, the CTMU can be viewed as a theory of the mathematical structure of a new mathematical object, SCSPL. Second, it has considerably more explanatory scope than other theories, providing a framework that is capable of accommodating the logic of self-determinative cosmogony without prejudicially excluding, e.g., subjective and non-material aspects of reality. Third, it largely embeds current models of reality, at least to the extent that these models have not already been pushed beyond their explanatory capacities. And fourth, it has what appear to be empirically valid implications, absent from other theories except as assumptions or unexpected observations, e.g. accelerating cosmic expansion. But perhaps the most important thing at this point is that, in principle, any apparent explanatory gaps can be filled. That is, if something can be explained within the realm of standard science, then it can be even better explained in an inclusive model fortified with conspansive duality. The ramifications of the CTMU are sufficiently extensive that their issuance from a single theory almost demands an explanation of its own. The scientific, mathematical, and philosophical implications of the CTMU are many and varied, running the gamut from basic physics and cosmology to evolutionary biology, the theory of cognition, the foundations of mathematics, and the philosophies of language and consciousness. But to be fair, nothing less is to be expected of a true reality theory, particularly one that takes the form of a description of the relationship between mind and the universe. After all, the CTMU is so named because it is a symmetric cross-interpretation of mental and physical reality, logically mapping the concrete universe into an abstract theory of generalized cognition and vice versa according to the M equals R principle. Were its implications anything less than profound, it would be miscategorized and misnamed. The CTMU says that reality is a language, a self-explanatory, self-theorizing, self-modeling structure identical to its universe. As such, it can be regarded as a limit or contraction of model theory, in which theory and universe coincide on the syntactic level of theoretical structure. Whereas most scientific theories are hopefully mapped into or onto the universe across an unbridgeable dualistic gulf, the CTMU is a monic theory of perception that simply eliminates the gulf by tautologically injecting logic in its entirety, including logical extensions of model theory and the logic of formalized theories, into reality as distributed self-transductive syntax. The CTMU is able to do this because it is a hard mathematical fact that anything which does not conform to the syntax of logic is inconsistent and therefore not a part of any stable, coherent reality. Because the reality we inhabit is visibly stable and coherent, the correctness of this move is assured. By eliminating the theory-universe gulf on the level of cognitive and perceptual syntax, the CTMU admirably fulfills the criterion of theoretic economy, and supertautologically at that. Does the CTMU qualify as a realization of Wheeler's vision, and is it alone in this distinction? While one naturally hesitates to put words into the mouth of an icon, one or both of two things seems to be true. Either relatively few reality theorists are inclined to share Wheeler's far-reaching worldview, or relatively few reality theorists are able to understand this worldview and pursue its implications. Consequently, despite Wheeler's eminence as a physicist, his hat has almost seemed a voice in the wilderness, leaving some with the impression that his deepest speculations have more the ring of distant prophecy than immediate theoretical practicality. But while the questions, no's, and clues in terms of which Wheeler describes his vision may occasionally appear heavier on intuition and creativity than on logical and mathematical rigor, they are just the sort of intuitive distillations of mathematical insight that one might expect from one so experienced in logical and quantitative reasoning. In conjunction with other necessary principles, they can be transformed into logico-mathematical properties of reality with enough restrictive power among them to determine a new mathematical structure called SCSPL, the ultimate intrinsic language. When all is said and done, there are excellent reasons to believe that this structure is unique and that any additional principles that Professor Wheeler might have in mind can be accommodated by the CTMU as surely as by logic itself. The CTMU, an intelligent design theory, which traces its origins to traditional theological arguments from design, holding that nature was more or less obviously designed by a pre-existing intelligence, maintains that the observed complexity of biological structures implies the involvement of empirically detectable intelligent causes in nature. Intelligent design, the most recent scientific outgrowth of design theory, is a scientific research program based on a more philosophically neutral and therefore scientific search for instances of a clear, objective, standard form of biological complexity. According to William Dembski, one of the movement's leading spokesmen, this has led to a theory of biological origins and development, according to which intelligent and empirically detectable causes are necessary to explain the complex, information-rich structures of biology. In view of the informational nature of complexity, Dembski observes that information is not reducible to natural causes. The origin of information is best sought in intelligent causes. Intelligent design thereby becomes a theory for detecting and measuring information, explaining its origin and tracing its flow. One of the first things to note about the above definition is that it couples the implied definitions of intelligence, causation, and information to a greater extent than do most dictionaries, pointing in principle to a joint definition of all of them. Since any good definition requires a model, one might be strongly tempted to infer on this basis that ID, as here defined, has a well-defined model in which all of its constituent concepts are related. It may therefore come as a surprise to many that perhaps the most frequent, or at any rate the most general, objection to ID in the wider intellectual community is that it has no model. According to its critics, it lacks any real-world interpretation specifying a fundamental medium able to support it or a means by which to realize it. Furthermore, its critics claim its central hypothesis is not only beyond proof, but unrealistic and not amenable to empirical confirmation. In all fairness, it must be noted that insofar as science has itself spectacularly failed to agree on a global model of reality, this is really nothing more than an exercise in hypocrisy. Science observes, relates, and extrapolates from observations with what often turns out to be great efficiency, but has time and time again proven unable to completely justify its reductions or the correspondences between its theories and the real universe as a whole. Although some critics claim that beyond a certain point, explanation is pointless and futile, they do not speak for science. The entire purpose of science is explanation, not rationally unsubstantiated assertions to the effect that a closed-form explanation is unavailable or unnecessary. In seeking a coherent explanation for existence, an explanation incorporating an ontological design phase that is rational, coherent, and therefore intelligent, the ID program is in fact perfectly consistent with science. However, being perfectly consistent with science means merely that something is in line for a model, not that it already has one. It has thus been possible for dedicated critics of ID to create the illusion, at least for sympathetic audiences, that they have it at a critical disadvantage. They contend that while science must be instrumental to society, yield specific predictions, and thus cite specific structural and dynamical laws that non-trivially explain its context of application, ID is nothing more than a Trojan horse for religious ideology, makes no non-trivial predictions, and is devoid of theoretical structure. Due to the number of sympathetic ears that such claims have found in academia, this illusion has all but promoted itself to the status of a self-reinforcing mass delusion in certain closed-minded sectors of the intellectual community. Obviously, it would be to the advantage of the ID movement and society as a whole to end this contagion by putting forth something clearly recognizable as a model. The problem, of course, is that as long as science in general lacks a fundamental model, so do all particular strains of science, including intelligent design. Due to the close connection between fundamentality and generality, ID or any other field of scientific inquiry would ultimately have to provide science in general with a fundamental model in order to provide one for itself. This might have led some people, in particular those who doubt the existence of a stable fundamental model of reality, to suppose that the ID controversy would remain strictly within the realm of philosophy until the end of time. But this is not the case, for if there were really no fundamental model, if there were no way to map theoretic cognition onto reality in its entirety, perception itself would lack a stable foundation. Perception, after all, can be described as the modeling of objective reality in cognition, and the modeling of cognition in objective reality. The self-evident perceptual stability of reality, on which the existence and efficacy of science and scientific methodology absolutely depend, bear unshakable testimony to the existence of a fundamental model of the real universe. The general nature of this model can be glimpsed merely by considering the tautological reflexivity of the term self-evident. Anything that is self-evident proves or evidences itself, and any construct that is implicated in its own proof is tautological. Indeed, insofar as observers are real, perception amounts to reality tautologically perceiving itself. The logical ramifications of this statement are developed in the supertautological CTMU, according to which the model in question coincides logically and geometrically, syntactically and informationally, with the process of generating the model, i.e. with generalized cognition and perception. Information thus coincides with information transduction, and reality is a tautological self-interpretative process evolving through SCSPL grammar. The CTMU has a meta-Darwinian message. The universe evolves by holological self-replication and self-selection. Furthermore, because the universe is natural, its self-selection amounts to a cosmic form of natural selection. But by the nature of this selection process, it also bears description as intelligent self-design. The universe is intelligent because this is precisely what it must be in order to solve the problem of self-selection, the master problem in terms of which all lesser problems are necessarily formulated. This is unsurprising, for intelligence itself is a natural phenomenon that could never have emerged in humans and animals were it not already a latent property of the medium of emergence. An object does not displace its medium, but embodies it, and thus serves as an expression of its underlying syntactic properties. What is far more surprising and far more disappointing is the ideological conflict to which this has led. It seems that one group likes the term intelligent, but is indifferent or hostile to the term natural, while the other likes natural but abhors intelligent. In some strange way, the whole controversy seems to hinge on terminology. Of course, it can be credibly argued that the argument actually goes far deeper than semantics, that there are substantive differences between the two positions. For example, some proponents of the radical Darwinian version of natural selection insist on randomness rather than design, as an explanation for how new mutations are generated prior to the restrictive action of natural selection itself. But this is untenable, for in any traditional scientific context, randomness is synonymous with indeterminacy or acausality. And when all is said and done, acausality means just what it always has, magic. That is, something which exists without external or intrinsic cause has been selected for and brought into existence by nothing at all of a causal nature, and is thus the sort of something from nothing proposition favored, usually through voluntary suspension of disbelief by frequenters of magic shows. Inexplicably, some of those taking this position nevertheless accuse of magical thinking anyone proposing to introduce an element of teleological volition to fill the causal gap. Such parties might object that by randomness, they mean not acausality, but merely causal ignorance. However, if by taking this position they mean to belatedly invoke causality, then they are initiating a causal regress. Such a regress can take one of three forms. It can be infinite and open, it can terminate at a prime mover which itself has no causal explanation, or it can form some sort of closed cycle doubling as prime mover and that which is moved. But a prime mover has seemingly been ruled out by assumption, and an infinite open regress can be ruled out because its lack of a stable recursive syntax would make it impossible to form stable informational boundaries in terms of which to perceive and conceive of reality. What about the cyclical solution? If one uses laws to explain states, then one is obliged to explain the laws themselves. Standard scientific methodology requires that natural laws be defined on observations of state. If it is then claimed that all states are by definition caused by natural laws, then this constitutes a circularity necessarily devolving to a mutual definition of law and state. If it is then objected that this circularity characterizes only the process of science, but not the objective universe that science studies, and that laws in fact have absolute priority over states, then the laws themselves require an explanation by something other than state. But this would effectively rule out the only remaining alternative, namely the closed cycle configuration, and we would again arrive at magic. It follows that the inherently subjective process of science cannot ultimately be separated from the objective universe. The universe must be self-defining by cross-refinement of syntax and state. This brings us back to the CTMU, which says that the universe and everything in it ultimately evolves by self-multiplexing and self-selection. In the CTMU, design and selection, generative and restrictive sides of the same coin, are dual concepts associated with the alternating stages of conspansion. The self-selection of reality is inextricably coupled to self-design, and it is this two-phase process that results in nature. Biological evolution is simply a reflection of the evolution of reality itself, a process of telic recursion mirroring that of the universe as a whole. Thus, when computations of evolutionary probability are regressively extrapolated to the distributed instant of creation, they inevitably arrive at a logical and therefore meaningful foundation. The CTMU says that on logical grounds, reality has generative and restrictive phases, and that evolution has generative and restrictive phases that are necessarily expressed in terms of those of reality. It asserts that the meta-cybernetic mechanism of evolution is telic recursion, and a temporal process which sets up a stratified dialectic between syntax and state, organism and environment, with mutually consistent mutable and invariant levels. It says that this process, though subject to various forms of noise, interference, and competition predicated on the internal freedom of reality, tends to maximize the utility of the universe and its inhabitants. And it thus says that evolution is much more than a mere environmental dictatorship, in which inexplicable laws of nature call the tune as biology slavishly dances the jig of life and death. The CTMU says that by its self-generative, self-selective nature, which follows directly from the analytic requirement of self-containment, reality is its own designer. Other features of the generative grammar of reality imply that reality possesses certain logical properties traditionally regarded as theological or spiritual, and that to this extent, the self-designing aspect of reality is open to a theological or spiritual interpretation. The CTMU, being a logical theory, does not attempt to force such an interpretation down anyone's throat. Not all semantic permutations need affect theoretical structure. What it does do, however, is render any anti-theological interpretation a priori false.